but I can't imagine how we're going to get out of this mess. Maybe you should turn yourself in.
I'm not turning myself in, Sarah. I just can't. We'll get out of it.
Of course we will.
My one and only love, Sarah, I promise, if you wait for me, things will get better. But the tears don't stop.
How long do I wait, though? And what happens when things do get better? Will you go back to Lorien?
I don't know, I finally say. Paradise is the only place I want to be right now, and you're the only person I want to be with in the future. But if we're able to somehow defeat the Mogadorians, then yes, I have to go back to Lorien. But I don't know when that will be. Sarah's phone buzzes in her pocket, and she pulls it halfway out to check the screen.
Who's texting you so late? I ask.
Just Emily. Maybe you should just turn yourself in and tell them you're not a terrorist. I don't want to lose you over and over, John.
Listen to me, Sarah. I can't turn myself in. I can't sit in a police station and try to explain how an entire school was destroyed and how 5 people were killed. How am I supposed to explain Henri? Those documents they found in our house, I can't get arrested. I mean, Six would absolutely kill me right now if she knew I was here talking to you. Sarah sniffs and wipes her tears away with the backs of her hands.
Why would Six kill you if she knew you were here?
Because she needs me right now, and it's dangerous for me to be here.
She needs you? She does? I need you, John. I need you here to tell me everything is going to be okay, that all this is worth it.
Sarah walks slowly over to a bench marked with initials. I sit down next to her and lean my shoulder onto hers. We're out of the light, and I can't see her face very well. I don't know where it comes from, but Sarah leans away from me and says,
Six is very pretty.
She is, I agree. I shouldn't have, but it just fell out of my mouth.
Not as pretty as you, though. You're the prettiest girl I know. You're the prettiest girl I've ever seen. But you don't have to stay away from Six like you have to with me.
When we go on walks, we have to be invisible, Sarah. It's not like we can just hold hands and walk down the street. We have to hide from the entire world. I'm hiding just as much when I'm with her as when I am with you. Sarah shoots off the bench and turns around.
You go on walks with her? Do you hold her hand when you two walk down the street?
I stand up and approach her with my arms out, the sleeves of my coat still caked with dirt.
We have to.
It's the only way I can be invisible.
Have you kissed her?
What?
Answer me.
There's something new in her voice. It's a mixture of jealousy and loneliness, and enough anger to give each word a kick. I shake my head.
Sarah, I love you.
I don't really know what else to say. I mean, nothing's happened. A tsunami of discomfort crashes into me, and I rifle through my vocabulary to piece together the right words. She's furious.
It was a simple question, John. Have you kissed her?
I haven't kissed Six, Sarah. We haven't kissed. I love you, I say, and then I cringe at the acidity of the words, the sentence sounding far worse than I thought it would.
I see. Why was that question so hard for you to answer, John? My life just keeps getting better and better. Does she like you?
It doesn't matter, Sarah. I love you. So Six doesn't matter. No other girls matter.
I feel like such an idiot, she says, crossing her arms.
Stop, please, Sarah. You're misinterpreting everything.
Am I, John?
She asks, turning her head and staring fiercely at me with tears in her eyes.
I've gone through so much for you.
I reach out and try taking Sarah's hand, but she snatches it away the instant our fingers touch.
Don't,
she says, a hard edge in her voice. Her phone buzzes again in her jacket pocket, but she doesn't make a move to check it.
I want to be with you, Sarah,
I say,
Nothing I say right now seems to come out right. All I can really say is that I've spent weeks missing you terribly, and there hasn't been a single day that I didn't think about calling you or writing a letter. I feel wobbly. I can tell I'm losing her. I love you. Don't doubt that for a second. I love you too, she cries. I close my eyes and breathe in the cool air. A bad feeling rushes over me, a prickly feeling that starts in my throat and claws its way into my shoes. When I open my eyes, Sarah has taken several steps away from me. There's a noise to my left, and I whip my head to see Sam. His eyes are downcast, and he bobs his head in a way that tells Sarah and me that he'd rather not be approaching, but he has to.
Sam?
Sarah asks.
Hey, Sarah, he whispers.
Sarah wraps her arms around him.
It's really good to see you, he says into her hair. But Sarah, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry, and I know you guys haven't seen each other in a long time, but John and I need to go. We're in a lot of danger. You have no idea.
I sort of do.
She pulls off of him, and just as I prepare to start reassuring her how much I love her, just as I'm about to start saying goodbye, chaos erupts. Everything happens so fast, I'm unable to take it all in completely, the scenes randomly skipping like a movie reel gone mad. Sam is tackled from behind by a man in a gas mask. The blue jacket he wears has the letters FBI on the back. Someone wraps their arms around Sarah and whisks her away from me. A metallic shell skids across the grass and lands at my feet, and the white smoke billowing from both ends burns my eyes and throat. I can't see. I hear Sam gag. I stumble away from the canister, then fall to my knees next to a plastic slide. When I lift my head, I see over a dozen officers surrounding me, all with guns drawn. The masked officer who tackled Sam has his knee on Sam's back. A voice through a megaphone blasts,
"Don't move! Put your hands on the top of your head and get on your stomach! You're under arrest!"
As I place my hands on the top of my head, cars that have been parked on the street the entire time we were there suddenly come to life. Their headlights turn on. Red lights flash from dashboards. Cop cars screech around the corner, and an armored vehicle with SWAT written on its side jumps the curb and slams on its brakes in the middle of the basketball court. Men yell and pile out of it at an alarming rate, and that's when someone kicks me in my stomach. Handcuffs are clicked around my wrists. Above me, I hear the whir of a helicopter. My mind grabs hold of the only explanation it can come up with. Sarah. The text messages. That wasn't Emily. The police were talking to her. What little of my heart that didn't break when Sarah backed away from me now shatters. I shake my head with my face against the concrete. I feel someone remove my dagger. Hands take the tablet from my waistband. I watch as Sam is pulled off the ground by his arms, and our eyes meet for a brief second. I can't tell what he's thinking. Cuffs are slapped around my ankles, and a chain connects the cuffs around my wrists. I'm jerked up from the ground. The cuffs are too tight and dig into my wrists. A black hood is pulled over my head and secured around my throat. I can't see a thing. Two officers grab my elbows while another shoves me forward.
"You have the right to remain silent,"
one of them begins as I'm led away, and I'm thrown into the back of a vehicle.
Chapter 24. After 5 minutes, I get up off my bed and look into the wardrobe to see if there are any clothes I want to take with us. I'm holding a black sweater when I decide I can't leave without saying goodbye to Hector. I rip another girl's jacket from the wall, one with a hood, and write a quick note to Adelina that said, "Had to say goodbye to someone in town first." The double doors open into the chilly air. And once I see the police cars and the newsvans lining Calle Principal, I feel better. The Mogadorians wouldn't try anything with so many witnesses. I walk through the gate with the hood over my head. The door to Hector's house is cracked open, and I knock softly on the doorframe. Hector? A woman answers.
Hello?
The door swings open, and it's Hector's mother, Carlota. Her black and gray hair is pinned carefully around her head, and her face is pink and smiling. She's wearing a beautiful red dress and a blue apron. The house smells like cake. Is Hector home, Señora Ricardo? I ask.
My angel, she says. My angel has returned.
She remembers what I did for her. How I cured her disease. I feel embarrassed by the way she's looking at me. But she bends down for a hug, and I can't resist.
My angel has returned, she says again.
I'm so happy you're feeling better, Señora Ricardo. The tears that fall from her eyes are almost too much, and soon my own eyes swell with water. You're welcome, I whisper. There's a meow behind Carlota, and I lean over to see Legacy trotting towards me from the kitchen with milk dripping from his chin. He purrs against my shins, and I bend down to pet his coat.
When did you get a cat? I ask.
This morning, he comes to my door, and I think he is so sweet. I've named him Theo.
It's good to see you, Theo.
He's a good cat, she says,
her hands now on her hips.
Very hungry boy.
I'm so glad you two found each other. Carlota, I'm very sorry, but I have to leave. I need to speak with Hector. Is he home?
He's at the cafe, she says.
The disappointment of Hector drinking so early in the morning must be evident on my face, because Carlota adds,
Only coffee now. He's drinking coffee.
I hug her goodbye, and she kisses both of my cheeks. The cafe is packed. I reach for the door, but just before I pull it open, something stops me dead in my tracks. Hector's sitting at a small table, but I notice him only in my periphery. My eyes are glued to who's sitting in the chair opposite him. The Mogadorian from last night. He's now clean-shaven, and his black hair has been lightened to a chestnut color. But there's no mistaking him. He's just as tall and muscular as before. Just as broad-shouldered. Just as dark and brooding. With the same heavy brows. I don't need the killer's description to know he matches it perfectly, with or without the dyed hair or missing mustache. I let go of the door and step backwards. Oh, Hector, I think. How could you? My legs shake. My heart pounds. As I'm standing there watching them, the Mogadorian turns and sees me at the window. My flesh turns cold. The world seems to stop. I'm stuck, rooted in place, incapable of moving a muscle. The Mogadorian watches me, causing Hector to turn my way as well, and it's only upon seeing his face that I'm shocked into action. I stumble backwards then, turn and run, but before I've made it far, I hear the cafe door open. I don't turn around. If the Mogadorian is following me, I don't want to know.
Marina!
Hector yells.
Marina!
Four officers ride with me. I touch my fingertips to the heavy chains. I'm certain I could break them if I wanted to. Or I could simply unlock the cuffs with telekinesis. But the thought of Sarah empties me of the energy required for such an undertaking. She couldn't have turned me in. Please don't let it have been her. The first drive takes 20 minutes, and I have no idea where we are. I'm pulled out and shoved into a second vehicle, which I assume is more secure, meant for longer transport. The second drive takes forever. 2 hours, maybe three. And by the time we finally stop, and I'm again jerked out, the sickness over what Sarah may have done has grown to the point that it's nearly unbearable. I'm guided into a building. After each turn, I have to wait for a door to be unlocked. I count four of them, and the air changes with each new corridor, becoming staler the farther I'm led. Finally, I'm pushed into a cell.
"Sit,"
one of them orders. I sit on a bed. The hood is removed, but the shackles remain. Four officers exit and slam the door shut. The two larger ones take seats outside my cell, while the other two leave. The cell is small, 10 feet by 10 feet, and contains the bed I'm sitting on, covered in yellow stains, and a metal toilet and sink. Nothing else. Three of its four walls are solid concrete, and there's a small window at the very top of the back wall. Despite the filthy mattress, I lie down, close my eyes, and wait for my mind to slow down.
"John!"
Sam's voice yells out. My eyes snap open. I rush to the front of the cell, grabbing hold of the bars.
"Right here!"
I yell back.
"Shut up!"
the larger of the two guards yells, pointing his nightstick at me. Down the corridor, somebody yells at Sam, too. He doesn't say anything else, but at least I know he's close. I reach my hand through the bars of my cell and press my palm against the flat metal surface of the lock. I close my eyes, focus my telekinesis to feel its inner workings, and yet I feel nothing other than a vibration that hurts my head the harder I concentrate. The cell, it's electronically controlled. I can't open it with telekinesis.
I run as fast as I can back to the orphanage, the hood ballooning with air behind me, and as I gain speed, the clouds and blue sky above me melt into a bright white. I burst through the double doors and run to the sleeping quarters. Adelina's sitting on my bed, the note folded on her lap. A small suitcase sits at her feet. When she sees me, she jumps up and hugs me. "You have to look at this," she says, handing me the paper. I unfold it to see that it's not my note after all, but a photocopied picture. It takes me a second to realize what the picture is of, and when I recognize it, my heart sinks. Someone has burned an enormous and intricate symbol into the side of a nearby mountain. With its careful lines and sharp angles, it's an exact replica of the scars around my ankle. The sheet falls from my hand and slowly floats to the ground. That was found yesterday, and the police are handing these copies out looking for information, Adelina says. We have to go now. Yes, absolutely. I need to talk to you about Ella first, I say. Adelina tilts her head. What about Ella? I want her to come with... Before I can finish my sentence, I am rocked off my feet by a thundering crash. Adelina falls as well and slams her shoulder into the ground. There's been an explosion somewhere within the orphanage. Several girls run into the room, screaming. Others run past the doorway looking for refuge elsewhere. I hear Sister Dora yell for everyone to go to the south wing. Adelina and I get to our feet and head for the hallway. But then, another explosion hits. And suddenly, I can feel cold wind. I can't hear what Adelina is saying above the screams, but I follow her gaze to the roof, where there's now a jagged hole the size of a bus. As I'm staring, a tall man in a trench coat with long red hair walks to the edge of the hole. He points at me.
Chapter 25. The interrogation room is warm and pitch black. I rest my head on the table in front of me and try not to fall asleep. But after being up all night, I can't help myself. Instantly, I feel a vision forming and hear the whispers. I feel myself floating up.